God,
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all the time today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
I'm Aaron, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Aaron, welcome.
And Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by AA's Simple Actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step four, part two. Please welcome our panel this evening, James and Mickey. I will read the first paragraph on page 67, and the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties of Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Mickey?
Oh,
James.
Yeah, Mickey's not, I'm going. I'm James. I'm an alcoholic. I guess we're going. My sobriety date is November the 20th of 2022. This is my home group, Simple Actions. I came into rooms in 2015 after being miserable for a lot of years. And I had 7 years sobriety and went back out in 1st of October 2022. And fortunately, it only took me about a month and a half of drinking to realize that I couldn't do it. And I came back in the rooms, and I'm happy and glad to say I'm back in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. He has a sponsor. I have a service position here at the home group. The first one we're talking about, fear. Oh boy, to me, fear and worry. So, I spent my whole life. I came in here late, in the rooms. I was 53 when I came in. My dad put me out in 1980. A quick summary. He put me out. I was living at home with my mom and dad, had a job, and he put me out. He got tired of my drinking and going on, so he put me out. So I moved on, and my drinking career took off. Once I moved out and got away from him and got on my own, fear and worry played a part of my life. big part of my life and a big part of my drinking. Always, I would sit in bed. I would go to bed at night unless I was just smashed and passed out. But even during the day, my head would steadily turn and roll about fears and worries about stuff that would never happen. I would just think about it. Oh, man, what if I'm going to lose my job? Or what if this is going to happen? What if that's going to happen? I would see or hear something, and it would get up in my head and just tumble around. And I would worry about it all day at work. And the only relief that I got from fear and worry was alcohol. Alcohol was a decompressant for me. My fears and my worries, when I drank, it took it away. When I put the first drink in me, it would start to come down. And the more I drank, the more it came down. And every time I was smashed, I wasn't even thinking about that. And then the next day, it would go over and over. The same thing would happen. Something else would come up. Maybe the boss isn't happy with the job I'm doing at work. Maybe somebody at home isn't happy something I'm doing, or just anything. I would hear something on top, look at television, which is the worst thing to do if you're fearing worry. Don't look at TV, especially the news. Cut that off. You're better off to sit there and get a piece of wood and go sit on the front porch and whittle on it than sit there and look at TV, because I could hear something on TV and it would just drive it. Oh my gosh, the world's coming to an end. Or, oh man, the whole economy's going to pot. Oh, we're getting ready to go to war. I ain't even in the army or in the military, but I would just take that stuff. I would just take that stuff and just, it would just worry me to death, you know? And most of it never came true. It was just, that was my fear and worry about it. So I'll stop there and I'll pass it to my good friend sitting next to me.
I'll make you alcoholic. Hey. My sobriety date is January 7th, 1989. And I've been out of town this month. So got to put a plug in for my home group. We're having a chili cook-off at 7 o'clock at the Potter's house because me and George are celebrating our anniversaries. So come on down and celebrate with us. Have some good food, fellowship. Funny. What?
Friday
night, this Friday. Anyway, I came in when I was 26 years old. I was petrified. I was scared to death, man. I didn't know what was going on. I really just had this feeling like that if I just quit drinking, everything would be okay. And that is not my story. Because what happened was, when I quit drinking, I gave it enough time, and all these things started to surface that really kind of showed me why I drank in the first place. And one of the largest ones is fear. It's funny because I just got done visiting my dad, and my dad ruled my life when I was a teenager, shoot, probably all the way till the time I was 40, because I worked for him. And just the kind of guy my dad was. Now, my dad is a great guy. Don't get me wrong. But he treated me totally different than he treated my friends and anybody else I knew. My friends would come over to my house and I wouldn't be there. And my dad would entertain them until I got there. And they would be like, your dad is the coolest guy I've ever met. And I didn't see it that way. And they would say things like, does your dad cut the yard with a pair of scissors and a tape measure? Okay. Because my dad was really meticulous. And he was like that with every aspect of his whole life. And he still is. Anyway, one thing that really gets me about that paragraph that it just never dawned on me, and it says, sometimes we think that we should class fear with stealing because it seems to cause more trouble. never ever really looked at it like that. When I looked at that statement, like, and even over the years, man, that is such a powerful statement. It's just incredible. I just really like this paragraph. It says, "This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was the evil and corroding thread." I mean, think about the way that those words go together. Mm-hmm. The evil and corroding thread of our life, the fabric of our existence, was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. And I always felt like I didn't deserve the misfortune. I mean, really. I always kind of felt like I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, by the time I was 26, I ended up having 3 DUIs. And I got that 3rd DUI. And I really thought that I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I remember, you know, basically I knew that I was going to have to go to AA. So I went to AA before I went to court. And I thought it was a death sentence. I really did. I thought, how did I end up here? And I realized today that it was a life sentence. It really was, because it gave me a life that I didn't even know existed before. So anyway, I'll just pass with that.
Thank you both.
Thanks.
Page 68. "Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role as he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear." James?
Yeah. So I'll kind of go back first before I talk about that. Go back to the last paragraph Mickey read. Believe it or not, all the years that I drank, I never got a DUI. Because I did fear getting one because I needed my license for my job, but I didn't fear you getting one. So I would let you drive my car. I don't care if you're running into a phone pole or whatever and kill both of us, as long as I didn't get the DUI out of it. You know, I did fear that. And my motto was, when I was drinking, you fly, I buy. Whether you drive your car with it, I've been put out of more vehicles and seen more people get put in a car and handcuffed and go to jail and me left on the side of the road. That didn't bother me not one bit. I didn't care if I was out in the middle of nowhere and it was 10 degrees and I didn't have nothing but a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. You were going to jail. I wasn't. And I never got a DUI, but I did fear getting one. And That's how I operated. That was my whole, it didn't matter what happened to you, long as it didn't happen to me. Going on what he just read, perhaps there's a better way we think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God and our power. As I grew up, as I left home and moved out on my own, through 1980 through 2015, before I came in here, one of my biggest problems was that I thought I was self-sufficient for life, that I didn't need nobody, no one to do anything. All I had to be willing to do was to get up and go to work every day and do a good job for the bosses to keep my lifestyle going. I didn't think I needed my parents, my two wives, my two kids. I took care of them and all, but I'm the main one. You rely on me. I don't rely on you. And, you know, I grew up in church. I was made to go to church as a kid. And when I left home at 18, even up to 18, when I left, and I believed in a higher power. But once I left and went out on my own, that went away. And as my life began to spun down and these things started to happen over time, and I was like, well, why is it me? You know, and I was always go back, well, I'm the model employee. I'm not the model parent. I'm not the model husband. I'm not the model friend, but I'm the model employee. I'm always there when nobody else will do whatever. I'm the man you go to. And why is all this stuff happening to me? And it was the same thing. It came to the same thing when it came to drinking. I worked for a company. I retired from the railroad, and they realized a long time ago that they had people working for them that had alcohol and drug problems. And they would come in and talk to us and say, hey, if you think you got a problem with drinking, come talk to us. We'll help you out. Well, I didn't trust them. My fear, there we go back to the fear part. I feared if I go to them and say, hey, I got a drinking problem and I'm drugging too, or they're going to fire me. They act like they're, you know, trying to help you. They don't really care about me. All they care about is how much I do each day. And finally, after 35 years there, when I didn't have anybody else to turn to, I finally went to them and told them that I had a problem. And a guy asked me, sat down and asked me, he said, tell me what you've been doing. And I told him. And he said, how long have you been doing this? And I said, basically on and on since I came to work here in 1980. And I was traveling at the time for like the last 25 years of my career. I was on the road 47 out of 52 weeks a year. And he goes, man, you need help. Are you willing to get it? And, you know, really, that's the first time that I started to trust somebody. And then as I came into the program, I learned I heard again about higher power, about God. And, I mean, I know who he is, but he don't have anything for me. I left him. He didn't leave me. But I didn't know this. He was there the whole time. I just didn't seek it. And once that kind of fell in, I came in here, started to take some suggestions from y'all, get a sponsor, get a home group, and work the steps in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The person or the high power I know as God started to come back in my life, and I started to trust him. I started to put my trust in him. Now, I've got to do some work to do it for me. And it says in you know, my spiritual condition, me getting up every morning, doing readings, praying, you know, doing those things, keeps him closer to me. When I went back out in 2022, I could see myself drifting. I stopped praying. I was still going to meetings, but I stopped praying. I stopped getting close to him. And I could see that it was like a path that was clear cut. I could see, I said, man, if I don't do something about this, I'm going to end up drinking again. And it was just a matter of time before I picked the drink up. Well, then once I picked the drink up, I convinced myself, I'm going to take my life back from him and I'm going to run it again. You know, I did such a great job for 35 years running it. You know, I'm going to take it back over after 7 years. You know, I graduated from here. I didn't get the master's degree, but I got the four-year degree. I can do it now. And You know, the only thing I can say about it, fortunately, it only took me about a month and a half to crash and burn and come back in here and realize that I need this and I need him. You know, I seek him. He's there waiting for me. All I got to do is seek him and he's there. And I'll stop with that.
So my mom was the youngest of 11. And her mom was as strict as a Catholic nun. And I remember she would always tell me as I was a little kid, she would be like, "You are going to hell." I mean, just say that over and over for me getting into whatever I was getting into. And that puts a lot of fear in a little kid, man, you know? So I remember coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I remember reading some of the book, and I remember them saying that you can create your own higher power. So somewhere between, the reason that I want to talk about this is because, you know, this paragraph starts off by saying, perhaps there's a better way. So, and I also, whenever I'm reading the book, I take it into context of what they're saying of where I am in the steps, right? So it says, "We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God." So if I back up a little bit, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't trusting God. I mean, God was this thing that I feared. God was this thing that was out there somewhere that I didn't have any explanation for or anything. So around the 60 or 90 day mark, man, I really wanted to drink. And when I was getting sober, I walked away from this 3.5 year relationship and I set down alcohol at the same time. And those were my two best friends, alcohol and this girl. And so around the 60 to 90 day time frame, I really wanted to drink. And there was this guy named Ben. And I went up to Ben at this meeting, and I had a sponsor, but I just chose Ben that night for some reason. And I said, "Ben, man, I really want to drink." And I didn't even really know Ben. It was just a guy that I picked. He was kind of in the forefront of the Galilee meeting at that time. I mean, he was a good guy. So anyway, I went up to him and said, "Man, I really want to drink tonight, and I don't know what to do." And he goes, "Jeez." And I'm like, "What?" And he goes, "I got a date tonight." And I thought to myself, this is just like being in a bar, right? What I thought. And he goes, "Hold on." He goes, "I'll tell you what." He goes, "Give me your phone number and what I'll call you when I get over to that girl's house." And I'm like, "Yeah, right." So gave him my phone number, went home. My little routine was I would leave the meeting, I'd go home after the last meeting of the day, and I would have my big book, and I would get into it, and I would read it. So I got home, and I was thinking, that guy ain't going to call me, man. And damn if he didn't. He called me. So we're sitting there on the phone, and he says, "Mickey," he goes, "let me ask you." He goes, "Do you pray?" And I said, I was hemming and hawing around the bush, and he cut me off. And he goes, "That was a yes or a no question." And I was like, "Ouch, man." So I was like, "All right, no." And he goes, "Well, let me tell you." He goes, "If you do pray," he goes, "there is no possible way that it can hurt you." And I never, ever looked at prayer like that ever, right? And he goes, "So," he goes, "tonight," he goes, I want you to say some prayers tonight, would you?" And I was like, "Absolutely." And he goes, "Even if you have to use my God," because, you know, that's what AA, that's all these AA Nazis do, right? They're like, you can use my God. So he taught me this prayer, and he said, what's the most important thing to you in the morning? I said, "My keys and my pager." And he goes, well, take one of those two things and throw it way underneath your bed. And I was like, why? And he goes, because in the morning, you're going to have to get on your knees to go down there and get them. And while you're down there, take care of business. And he taught me this prayer. And he said, please, God, remove the obsession and the compulsion for me to drink away. And I started saying that and keep me sober for the next 24 hours. And he said, just keep it simple. And he just told me, just pray that prayer. And I'm telling you, within 2 week time frame, my obsession and my compulsion was removed from me. And I have not, it has never come back the entire time that I've been sober. Now, I'm not telling you that I haven't had to do a lot of things probably to keep that at bay, like work the steps, work with others, do a lot of other things, but it has never come back. So that was the point right there, that a miracle happened in my life that I had never seen before, never felt before. And when that went away, I was trusting a God that I'd never trusted before. So then it comes to the point where I get to the context of it. And it says, we're on a different basis because now we're going to trust and rely on this God. Because really up to this point of putting this stuff on paper, all I was doing was trusting God. All I was doing was like saying some prayers, going to some meetings, doing the first, second, and third step. But now we're on the fourth step where really there's a lot of meat and potatoes that got to go on the paper. And the other thing about this fear thing. So this fear exercise right here will absolutely save and change and alter the direction of your life, because I never had anything to do with fear. And what would happen is, and I don't totally understand what the statement says, that it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But what I think it means to me is that fear comes up and it just paralyzes me. And I don't know what to do about it. So I take an aversion. I go around it. I don't go through it. I don't deal with it. I hide from it, right? And what happens is when it hits me the next time, it's twice as big or larger. And then I'm just like, I'm freaked out. I'm walking through my life with all this stuff that I can't handle. And when it comes to face me, I don't know what to do with it. And then it says so simply, man, this is just, it's astronomical how simple life in Alcoholics Anonymous really is. Says the verdict of the age is faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. I mean, that's just freaking phenomenal. So what that's saying, though, is that it's not only that I'm trusting God, but I have to rely on God. I have to rely that God's going to do what God says he's going to do. And God's all-knowing and all-powerful. God can do whatever he wants. So when a fear comes up, I need to back off somewhere and I need to take this exercise and I need to go to God and say, here's my problem, God, here's my fear, and demonstrate through me what you would have me be, and then I can outgrow this fear. But it's just absolutely incredible that there's a way to get around fear or a way to get through fear with the ultimate power and help. You know what I'm saying? Where I should have been going the whole time anyway, but I didn't have any kind of relationship with God. And that's the other thing about AA is that, you know, not only do you have a God, but they teach you how to have a relationship with God. like they teach you how to have a relationship with God, where God's on the inside. And I truly believe that that's what this four steps about. It's not about telling everybody about all my sins. And it's not about telling everybody about all these boogeyman things that I'm scared of. In the third step, it says that I turn my will and life over to the care and direction of God. So it means that I'm inviting God in. The fourth step is taking the trash out, because God doesn't want to live in a dipsy dumpster. Really? If God's coming in, I need to make room for God to have. And I need to take all the stuff out that I've been holding on to that I absolutely don't need. And it's all garbage. It really is. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Yeah.
Page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes. Absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is the lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow men no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about that? James?
Oh, boy.
We got time.
When I went to rehab, back when I came in, was introduced to the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know it. They just sent me there. And when I got there, and they detoxed me out, and they sent me in this room, and a guy handed me a big book. And he said, you got to work the first five steps before you're going to get out. And so I took the book back, and he started me off slow. He said, go back to your room and sit down and read the doctor's opinion. If you don't understand it, read it again. If you don't understand it, read it again. And this dude, that's what he did. He said it takes about 9 minutes to read it. Well, I didn't have any problem with that. I knew that was me in there. Well, so the first step, admitted I was an alcoholic. The second step, higher power. I knew I needed one. Third step, turn my life and will over to God. We get to step four, and they want me to list all this stuff on paper. I never forget, I went in his office after there was nobody in there. He was in there by himself because they all sat in there. The counselor said, Al, how long can I stay here? He goes, what do you mean? I said, you said I had to do all five steps. He goes, yeah, well, you're getting ready to do step four, make an inventory. And he had a guy that worked with him. He said, Shane's going to sit down and give you the paperwork and explain to you. I go, yeah, I've read about what I got to do. Man, I don't even want to put this stuff on paper. I mean, can I stay here for like 3 or 4 months, whatever? And he's like, what? He goes, man, you don't want to go home to your family? I said, no, not really. I don't want to stay here. I'm happy just sitting here than having to list all that stuff. But here, going from there and then coming back here and getting a sponsor, this is where sponsorship is so important, to have a sponsor. In my total of 8 years, 7, and now another year of sobriety, I've had 3 sponsors. And this is where sponsorship is so important through going something like this. And I just worked the steps with a sponsor. When I came back in after going back out, I said, I'm going to get another sponsor. I just was ready to mix it up, and I'm going to try some different things. I'm going to go to some different meetings, listen to some different stuff. I ended up coming over here, ended up making this my home group because I live on the other side of water, and I heard a guy speak. He was a home group member over at Candlelight. And he comes out to Chesapeake, and I asked him to be my sponsor. So we went through the steps. And, you know, when we got to this part, as we were reading it, you know, and I told him, I said, man, I got a messed up. I said, look, when I drink, when I put alcohol in my system, I make bad decisions. I make bad moral decisions. He says, look, this ain't a hit list for you to rub somebody out. It's like Mickey said, do I want to live in a dumpster permanently, or do I want to get rid of all this garbage that I got and get rid of it? And every time that I've worked the steps, you know, and when I first came in, these guys went here that had been here for like 30 some years. I got, how many times can you work the steps? Well, I find out every time that I go through the steps and work it, I start to get a little more, I get some trash back in that dumpster and I want to get it out of there. I want to cleanse it out. And my sponsor there told me, said, it's not a hit list. It's just, you want to get this stuff off of you. So, you know, I ran a big book meeting in my first home group. And this was always one part that when I chaired the meeting, we did different readings. Somebody would read this part and goes, all right, does anybody want to share? Boy, it was quiet as, you could hear a mouse run across the floor. And then you could hear an ant crawling up. Nobody would say anything. You know, it's a topic that a lot of people feel uncomfortable about talking about. And when I was asked to speak in here, I said, yeah, I'll do sport because I need to talk about it to a certain extent because it was part of my story. But like my sponsor said, it's not a hit list. It's just to get rid of this stuff that I've done. My sex conduct that I've done over the years. It's just to get rid of it so it doesn't weigh so heavily upon me. And if it does, if I don't get rid of it, you know, it says in here, you will drink again if I don't get rid of it. If I don't go out and make right the wrongs. And I'm not saying to go out, and it says later on as we work steps on certain things like this, you can't go out and make an amends to people on some of this stuff because it would hurt people, you know. But it gets it off of me. And later on as Travis reads it in there, it tells you why. So I'll pass over to Mickey.
Mickey, alcoholic. Mickey. And I got to tell you, it's really an honor to be on the panel with James because James is one of my best friends. Me and James do a lot of work together. And it's nice sitting up here with James. And it's nice sitting up here with James that he's sober again. Because that kind of broke my heart when that happened. Anyway, now about sex. That's a funny topic, ain't it? Because it really is. Because everybody's different when it comes to that thing, man. And I remember, like, I had this sponsor, and he wasn't a big book guy. And he was my sponsor for 25 years. Anyway, the first time we went through the steps, I said to him, I said, I need to do this four step, man. And he goes, what's your rush, man? Why are you rushing through the steps? And I'm like, I ain't rushing through them. I'm like, the people at the damn meeting keep telling me you're going to drink if you don't do this. I'm like, so I'm going to do it. I'm like, I don't want to drink. I was terrified of drinking, man. And so he goes, well, how do you want to do it? And I was like, why are you putting it on me? And he goes, well, all right, then. He goes, how about if we just do like an autobiography? And I was like, yeah, okay. I got home and I was like, I ain't doing no damn autobiography. I got in touch with this guy, man, and he had a Hazleton 4-step inventory list, right? It was 26 pages long. And I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this. And it was 26 pages long. And it had questions in there that would just rock your world, man, because they had to cover everybody. They had to cover all the sickos, the clean people, you know, whatever, the preppy people, whatever. They had to cover them all, right? So I remember getting to this one question, and I called my sponsor up. I'm like, this shit ain't for me. And he goes, he goes, what do you mean? I'm like, there's a question in here. It's just outrageous. And he goes, what is it? And I said, Seth, right here. He goes, have you ever had sex with farm animals? Then it gets real quiet on the other end, right? And he goes, well, have you? And I go, no. And he goes, well, just skip it then. And I'm telling you, man, I was wound so tight. Like, I couldn't even see that part. I couldn't even see that you could skip a question. I was like, if I don't answer this question correctly, I'm going to be all messed up. That was so funny. Anyway, so other than that, though, like I did have some things that, like, the deep, dark secrets that I wasn't going to tell anybody and stuff. And I remember leaving my sponsor's house that day, man, and I was proud of myself because I told him things that I had never told anybody in my entire life. And I didn't feel that he judged me. Usually he would come back and tell me something that he did, either similar or whatever. And, you know, the funny thing about that is, like, I went to a lot of Catholic confessions, and not one time did that guy ever slide that screen open and go, don't worry about it, I did that too. Like, they never had any ad lib in that. My sponsor was really cool about that. But I did. I got all those secrets out. And what I've learned over the years is the power of that secret. You know, having that festering secret inside of you, and how fast it's like weeds in a garden, man. They grow and multiply so fast because you got something in there that's festering anyway, right? You don't want to tell anybody and you're stuck with it. You don't know what to do with it. That's just a really bad place to be. So, like, having this exercise to be able to go to somebody and really get everything out, you know, and really address sex, like, head on, because it's such a controversial topic. So anyway, the way that it was in my life, though, was I had four sisters, two older and two younger. My oldest sister was involved with one of the renegade motorcycle guys. My younger sister got pregnant when she was 16. So our house, now back then, that was a huge ordeal back then. And our house was tipped upside down with that sexual kind of stuff. And let me tell you, man, it scared me straight. First of all, my sisters were mean as hell. And I just viewed every woman was going to be like that. Like, once you get down to really know them, they're going to be just like your sisters. I'm like, you want that? I'm like, nope. All I did was drink and drug, right? And right before I got sober, I dated this girl for 3.5 years. And man, it was like fire and water, man. Like, I loved that girl more than anybody I loved in my entire life, including myself. I still don't understand how powerful some of that stuff gets, but it was horrible. It was toxic. And I never understood manipulation until after I got sober, because I was inebriated most of the time, right? So once I got sober, I realized that this girl would stage fights with me so that she could get, like, whatever she wanted, like jewelry or whatever she wanted at the time. She knew that all she had to do was stage a fight and then break up with me and then get back together with me. And she knew I would get her whatever she wanted, whatever she wanted. I never understood any of that, like, manipulation stuff until after I got clean and sober. And I was like, man, You know, I think that my dad, you know, kind of raised me that way in the workforce too. Like, he would hold things on you, man. And now that manipulation stuff is like downright grungy, man. Like, just the way that it makes you feel and stuff when you finally realize what's going on. But I'm glad I didn't have a lot of that sex thing that I had to deal with in that first part, because I was so terrified of women because of my sisters and like my younger sister getting pregnant. And I was like, that's the last thing that I need, is to get somebody pregnant. The condition that I'm in, man, I couldn't make sense of the world no matter what. And here I am trying to get somebody pregnant. Anyway, I'm glad that never happened to me. God really spared me on that one right there. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
All right. Page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected our each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
Each of you got about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that? So when I read this for the first time, this here, we reviewed our conduct. Boy, that was easy. Yes, 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 yes. Whom did we hurt? Everybody. But there it ends. Were we at fault? Yes. What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. So you put it all down on paper as you do the columns, as I did, and I sat there and looked at it and went over it and went over it. And, you know, I mean, it was misuse of my will, you know, because I'm living my life off of my will, not God's will. Heard a guy when I first came into rooms, when I got back from rehab, I used to go over to Craddock every day, and they had a bunch of old guys over there. And I mean, they had a lot of time, I'll never forget it. The guy passed away, he moved to South Carolina, but he said something one day. We were in there just doing a big book discussion. He said, you know, we're put on this earth. God puts us on this earth and gives us free will to do whatever we want with it. But are we willing to take that free will and give it back to him? And it hit me right then. I wasn't. When I was drinking, I wasn't willing to give up nothing that I was doing back to nobody. Because in my mind, what I just read there was, I wasn't hurting anybody. Because most of the stuff that I did was away from here. Well, what am I hurting? Who am I hurting? I'm 500 miles from home. Nobody's going to know. You know? I didn't consider anybody else, because I'm living life at my will, not on his will. And it goes hand in hand with my drinking and everything else. You know, my wife knew I drank a little bit away from work. She didn't have any idea that I was out getting smashed every night, that I had turned over and started doing other stuff on top of that. She didn't have one bit, because when I left home on Sunday and pulled off, I was on my own. I went back to the days of that 18-year-old kid that my dad put out, and I got my own place, and I'm, you know, I think I'm a playboy, living it up, doing what I want to, when I want to whoever, whatever. And I'm still doing it at this age. And then I'm like, you know, I found out that when I came in here, that all of my years of drinking up to 53, I'm 53 years old, coming to AA. I'm still acting like I'm 18, 19, 20 years old. I'm doing the same stuff that I was doing when my dad put me out and went and got my own place. What have I done with my life? You know, where is it? Number one, where has it gone? 35 years had gone by, and I'm still doing the same stuff. And fortunately, the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a sponsor, by going through and working the steps, you know, and you take everything out of me, you put all this stuff down on paper, what you've done, and you realize, you know, that there's another way to live. There's a better way to live. There's a better way to be a husband. There's a better way to be a parent. There's a better way to be a son to his mother and father than what I was doing. And that's why I love this program so much. It saved me. The people in here, y'all sitting in here, you know, the meeting is here. The book is here. Without the people in here, that's what it all comes together, you know. And I was told when I came in here, you know, just listen. And I still do. I still today, I walk into a meeting, whether it's a big book meeting, whatever kind of meeting it is, hoping to hear something that'll help me today, even today, through my life. And I usually do. Somebody in there says something that I can take out of what's there and go out and apply it to my daily life. And all of those things I said was, and it wasn't just true about my sex conduct. It was true about everything else I was doing. My whole life was running like that on those things that I just listed: selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, who am I to hurt? Everybody. Arise jealousy, suspicion, bitterness. Where was I at fault? I was at fault in all of it. I was at fault. It's nobody else's fault but mine. And, gosh, the first time I did this, and each time I do this work through the steps, it's just unbelievable. So I'll stop there.
Mickey, alcohol.
Mickey. I wanted to back up for a second and talk about them secrets then for a second, because I was dating this girl when I got divorced from my first wife. Before I was married again for the rest of my life. anyway, so this girl gave me this tip one time, and she, you know, like, if you back up a couple pages in here, it says, yeah, we did an inventory all right, but we held on to some of the worst items in stock. And this girl said to me, she goes, I was getting ready to do my four step, and I was getting ready to go over to my sponsor's house, and I had these two things that I was not going to tell her. I just knew that there's no possible way I could tell her. She goes, and what I did was I wrote it down on a piece of paper. I put it in an envelope and I mailed it to her house so that it showed up before I got there. I thought that was the coolest thing I had ever heard. And seriously, like if I ever find myself in that predicament, I will do that. Because if I don't have the courage to do it, I could at least put it on a piece of paper and mail it to my sponsor's house or whoever before I get there. And, you know, like James said, you know, like there's a lot of selfishness and dishonest stuff when I look at all that sexual innuendos and all that stuff. So, and I've had to use this all the way through my life, you know, all the way up until now. So this plays a bigger part for me in now than it ever did way back then. Like, you know, just whether, especially in the selfish context. And I like how Bill writes. He says, we got this all down on paper and looked at it, because like, if I'm talking to somebody, I can justify myself right on through that stuff. But when it's down on paper, I can't justify a way out of it. And we subjected each relation to the test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and to help us live up to them. We remembered that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. I really love that, because, you know, I was brought up in a Catholic home, and basically all they told us was sex was bad. I mean, really, that's what we got. And so some of this stuff is really enlightening. It just really, you know, it sets a different tone, man. It just, because like, I can't live on that sword edge of that black or white, man. It's just, that doesn't work for me. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
We're going to pass the basket in the seven and the quarters of the center tradition. The every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions are cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local service district, area, and general service office remains self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help other alcoholics who still suffer. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which all our meeting can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Anyone? Yep. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, or in need of a sponsor, please hang around after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Thank you. Point out literature is available. It's over there to my left, your right. Please see me or any other home member after the meeting if you'd like it. To clarify, if you'd like any of the books, if it folds, it's free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Or if you're shy, please send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting, all invited, encouraged and invited to join us at the fellowship at the meeting after the meeting. They'll be held at Cafe Stella.
Stella.
Yeah. In closing, please thank the panel for turning out the first thing.
Great job, Billy. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to our speakers. And David has volunteered to read the last two pages of 164.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic named David.
Hey, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, David. Nice to meet you.
Good job, Jane.
So, moment of silence. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen. Amen.